by some of the researchers that we have, some of the scientists and on staff at Perimeter Institute. And so we have the first one now, so very actually lucky and privileged to have one of our cosmologists. I said that was one of our three main areas of research. And this is Dr. Justin Curry, who's actually a faculty member here at Perimeter Institute. In terms of his background, he is Canadian, was born in Montreal, did his undergraduate degree at McGill University, and then went across the border to the US, got his PhD from Princeton, New Jersey, and then moved into New York City to Columbia University to do a postdoc, and then after that 1 year at MIT. And then after that he came here probably 6 months ago, I think, so he's one of more our more recent members, and we're actually very, very delighted and fantastic we're able to seduce him to come back to Canada. And faculty member here, his research area, as I said, is cosmology. Further than that, it's the early universe and inflation theory. We'll be talking a bit about that. In terms of non-academic aspects, so Stanley is Canadian, so he very much likes playing and watching hockey. And I have been trying to learn some of the finer points of hockey from Justin and some of the other Canadians. Doesn't make as much sense as cricket. It's not as intuitive as cricket.
Damien, did they catch on the ice yet on the skates?
No, unfortunately, no. It was. There's a lake out there where sometimes play. It was not very icy, and I can't ice skate.
So,
but I'm ready to go. So without any further ado, I'd like to introduce Justin Curry.
That's by far the longest introduction I've ever had. So, well, it's a great pleasure to be with you guys. I hope you enjoy your stay at the Perimeter. Welcome. And the topic of what I thought I would chat with you about this morning is how the universe began, how we think it began, how we don't know it began. So, clearly, questions like how the universe began, what happened at the Big Bang, was there something before the Big Bang, are probably some of the most profound questions that we've ever asked ourselves. Puzzled the Greeks and philosophers and scientists for centuries. But I think an even more mysterious question that I won't try to address today is, what's it So, let's start by asking ourselves, or let's define and say what cosmology is. So, for such questions, I refer myself to some of my esteemed colleagues, so Professor Rocky Cole at Fermilab, who tells me that cosmology is about the makeup of the universe, whereas cosmetology. Okay, so the two concepts of the main ideas of the Big Bang model, is that the universe started about 14 billion years ago in a hot and dense state. So that far back, the universe looked very different. Okay, things were very hot, and since then it's just been basically expanding and cooling down. Okay, so that's the first premise of the Big Bang model. And also another key point is that early on the universe was actually very homogeneous, was pretty much the same everywhere, but there were small parts that were denser than other regions. And because of gravitational attraction, places that were denser got denser even more. It attracted stuff into the over-dense region. And these regions of higher density eventually over time, as the universe cooled down, is what formed galaxies, stars, planets, and life. Yeah. Now here's a funny thing about the name Big Bang. Right? There are many funny things. But first of all, when you say Big Bang theory, it immediately tells you that I'm going to tell you what's the Big Bang, right? What's the bang? Right? But in fact, the Big Bang theory is everything except for the Big Bang. Okay? So it's a theory that explains everything from about 1 second till today, but doesn't tell you what happened at time zero. Okay. So what I thought I would do today is there's going to be two parts to this talk. In the first part, I just thought I would tell you about some of the questions that people ask me a lot when I tell them I'm a cosmologist. So, and things that probably your students are asking you. And probably you know the answers to some of these questions, but I just thought, okay, maybe we start with some of these puzzles. And then the second half will be more to tell you about what the modern views are about the very early universe, so between time 0 and 1 second. So starting with those, so let's start with these frequently asked questions. You've probably heard them before. So if we think of a bang as an explosion, normally we think of the bang as happening somewhere, so where did it happen? Right? Where in space did the bang take place? There must be a center for it. Second question that's often asked is, if the universe is expanding, like we think of an explosion, normally we think of things flying through some existing space. So what is the universe expanding into that is expanding? Now, is the Earth expanding? Right? Is my body expanding? Well, yes, but for other reasons. And how do we know it's expanding? And finally, is the universe finite or is it infinite? Oh, by the way, I should say, please interrupt me at any point, right? I want this to be interactive. And then the most frequently asked questions, which I certainly won't dare to answer, is whether there are aliens and can we talk to them? Actually, this is not that crazy a question. So there are experiments that try to search for alien civilizations. Okay, you've probably heard of the SETI experiment. But I won't touch this question with a 10-foot pole. And so the first three questions that I mentioned, they all basically have the same answer, or a common answer. So remember, the first three questions is, where is there a location for the Big Bang? What's the universe expanding into? And is the Earth itself expanding? And really, these questions are all tied to misconceptions of what the Big Bang actually is. Now, maybe you have seen this analogy of the balloon for the universe expanding. Okay. So I'll explain to you what the balloon analogy is about, and then I'll explain to you why I don't think it's that good of an analogy anyway. So the idea of the balloon is that, so imagine you have a balloon and we draw on it some lines, right, some coordinates on it. And we'll put galaxies, let's say, at every point where the lines cross. The expansion of the universe is analogous to the balloon expanding in time, as if someone was blowing. And you can see from this picture, first of all, that if you're sitting at a given point, as the balloon expands, every point around you is moving further away. Okay, so any point in the balloon sees its neighbor expanding away from it. There is no center to this expansion. Everyone would claim that everything else is moving away from him. Yes?
That one puzzles me just a little bit because there's a red and blue shift when you start off. So relative.
Very good. So that's a very good question. So I'll come to the explanation of redshift, but indeed we see expansion. We infer that the universe is expanding by looking at the redshift of distant galaxies. Now it's true that some of them are blue shifted, some of them are redshifted. And that's just because galaxies don't just move because of the expansion of, well, not move, but the redshift we observe is not just because space is expanding between us and them, but also they might have their own velocity. They might be attracting gravitationally to one of their neighbors, and that we would see as a blue shift if they're moving towards us. But on average, if you average over all the galaxies nearby, on average they're moving away.
Do galaxies rotate among themselves?
Absolutely. They have peculiar motion. They have their own motion through gravity. But if you average over their motion, there's an overall recession. Okay. That's a very good question. It also explains that the universe doesn't have to expand into anything. Actually, that's one of the things it doesn't do so well, this analogy. Okay, let me just move on to what I consider to be a better analogy for the story. What I don't like about the balloon analogy is it still gives you the impression that there is a center to the balloon. right? That there needs to be this extra space within the balloon, that the universe is enclosing something. But it doesn't have to. And the better analogy is to think of an infinite rubber sheet. Okay, so we do the same idea. So imagine my infinite rubber sheet, and on it, I basically draw some lines. And again, we can put galaxies at every point if we want. And then as a function of time, the universe expands, which basically means that this sheet is getting bigger, always infinite. But the point is now these lines are getting more and more spread out, just like the balloon. Okay? So the same is essentially similar to the picture of the balloon expanding, except that here, there is no need to talk about the balloon enclosing anything. Okay, you picture your universe as it is, as a two-dimensional thing in this case, and it's just expanding as such. The question, what is the universe expanding into, also has an obvious answer here. It doesn't expand into anything. It's infinite and expands infinitely as it is. There doesn't need to be any space beyond the space shown on the blackboard.
So would that be seen as a perfectly flat sheet, or would it have ripples and wobbles?
Good. So, excellent question. So, indeed, in general relativity, matter curves space. Okay. So, indeed, there will be, so it depends how you choose time, but in the conventional choice of time, indeed, this thing will have ripples. So galaxies will curve space. Okay. And the final question is that I want to address on this slide is the Earth expanding? And the answer is no. Okay? So the expansion of the universe is a gravitational effect. But it's a very weak effect compared to the self-gravity of the Earth. Okay? So the force that's keeping you on the Earth, and the force that's keeping the Earth bound to the Sun, and the force that bounds the Sun into the galaxy, that's a much stronger force than any stress due to the expansion of the universe. Okay, so really the accurate picture is that the galaxies remain bound as such, they remain point-like, whereas the space in between them over time expands.
Does this expansion accelerating or decelerating?
Good. Very good question. So today, I won't talk so much about the present acceleration, but indeed, the universe has been decelerating for most of its history, okay, from about the time when time nearly zero till about 7 billion years old. And from that moment until today, roughly speaking, it's been accelerating. Okay, but I'll be able to explain a little bit better later on. Okay, so but indeed, if you like, the expansion was decelerating for a long amount of time, and more recently, if you like, it's been speeding up again. What I will tell you about later on in this talk is I'll explain the phase of acceleration that occurred somewhere here between time 0 and 1 in a fraction of a second. And I'll explain to you how this can happen, what's causing it. And it's going to be similar physics that might explain why today the universe is accelerating again. But today I'll focus mostly on what happens down here.
Well, see, I hadn't got the fact that the galaxies weren't expanding before. So we always try and make things really concrete visuals. So if I want to use the rubber sheet, rather than drawing galaxies on the sheet, I should maybe put objects on the sheet. And then as you pull the sheet, those
yes.
objects stay the same size.
Exactly. Okay. That would be good. That's a good way to do it. Yeah. And I guess in this talk, I'm trying to indeed give you some, I guess, you have much more experience than I do in pedagogy, but one thing that I have noticed is that as a pedagogical tool is that this is a bit more limited and doesn't capture as much of the story as the picture of this infinite point.
There's a version you can do of this on an overhead that's really nice. Mm-hmm. If you draw dots instead of the grid, like dots, like you mean, and then you expand it so they're further apart, then you overlay them, And what you can do is you can choose to overlay which ones you want to be the center of the universe, and you can actually see that they're all moving away from whichever point you overlap, they move away from each other too.
So like isometric graphic reading you use, like the dots and
stuff? I just do it on just draw a bunch of dots on a page. And then you just, even with a photocopier, you blow it up and overlap.
So was that okay with the analogy of the expanding universe? I was going to move on to the fourth question, which is the evidence that the universe accelerates, if the universe is expanding. And this is also something we've all heard, but it's a bit subtle, again, what exactly is happening. So the precise answer is we look at distant galaxies, let's say, and we look at the spectrum of the light that we receive from those galaxies. We can either look at specific, as you know, so atoms, they absorb and emit at certain precise wavelengths or frequencies. So we can look at these spectral features and infer what was the wavelength of the light when it was emitted at the galaxy. Okay? And that's different from the wavelength we observe. And for the following reason, that it took time for the light to get from the galaxy to us. And since space is expanding, in the intervening time, the wavelength, the space expanded, and so did the wavelength of the photon that came from there to here. When a wavelength expands, it means effectively that its frequency decreases, which means it's getting redder. So in the spectrum, it's moving towards the redder part of the spectrum. And this redshift is really being caused not because this galaxy is moving away, but because the space in between is expanding. And as the question was asked, which was very good, is that it's not always redshift, because this guy could happen to be moving because of some because it's attracted one way, it has some velocity one way. In which case, it could be that the overall effect is that the redshift from the expansion gets dominated by this blue shift, this Doppler shift from the motion. But on average, when we average over distant galaxies, we find that they redshift. Okay? They have an overall redshift. And moreover, they follow Hubble's law, which in this language is the statement that the redshift, which is just the ratio of the observed wavelength to the emitted wavelength. Yes.
How do we know that the original wavelength wasn't red to begin with?
So there are different ways to do this, but as I mentioned, we know certain features in the spectra because we have specific wavelengths at which light gets emitted or absorbed. And so you're just looking, if you like, you're looking for features of the spectrum, but they're all shifted. These features are shifted. They're also broadened and whatever else, but you know, roughly speaking, in the simplest answer possible, is that these features are the same but shifted. So you can infer what their original wavelengths was.
If we're going to go back to the rubber sheet, in this case we would actually draw the wavelengths on the rubber sheet and then stretch it and you would see the larger wavelength?
Yeah, basically like this is shown here. This is not my drawing, I think it came from a Scientific American article. But I think this is nice because it shows how the rubber sheet is this space here and it gets expanded. And the way as it expands, so does the wavelength of the wiggle.
I never had this question before until seeing this visualization.
Okay, good.
My question is about length.
Yes.
Now let's ignore weirdnesses about measuring big distances, but let's pretend we had a big enough ruler to go from the sun to the earth. On this picture, it has four grid markings, let's say, between
that. Yeah.
If we were to measure it in the bottom versus the top, is the length actually longer, or is our ruler getting longer?
Ah, good.
So the, the assumption is that the ruler itself would not...
I don't know.
No, it's a very good question. I'm not at all there. There's one caveat, which is the ruler should not... Normally, when we think of a ruler, we think of something that's stuck together, right? So the question would be whether the ruler, is it very tightly bound, like the Earth is?
Right.
Okay. So let's assume it's a very diffuse ruler, basically made out of little sprinkles, okay, little M&Ms that I sprinkle as my ruler. Then, indeed, in that case, really, the ruler would expand. But if it's a really honest-to-God ruler, like we're used to, it would just sit there in space. Not expand, much like the Earth doesn't.
Okay, so the distance is actually greater.
Yes.
Okay.
I still have a question.
Yeah. Okay.
If the wavelength, in fact, increases with the expansion of the universe and the frequency decreases,
yes.
So there's a loss in energy.
Yeah, that's right. But it's not the. It's a trade-off. Right, and it's not a violation of any of the laws you know and love.
What happens to it?
Yeah, so it's the energy gets exchanged between the gravitational field. So this expansion of space is a gravitational effect. And it's a trade-off between, basically as these things were, the energy, the energy goes into the gravitational field, or there's an exchange between the energy of the stuff, if you like, and the energy of the gravitational field.
The energy is lost, and the gravitational field also decreases, does it not, in this case?
Okay, so I will think about this. These are good questions. So let me...
photons going uphill. No. Well, the total volume of the universe increases.
Yes.
And so if you just multiply by the decreased energy density, then you get the same energy content. Yeah. That's how you get a black body response.
That's right. So the point is that, I have to think of a good answer to this. I mean, the point is that the point is that, so if you think of a thermal bath of photons, if they're closer together, they're hotter, right? And as they expand, they cool down. That's basically also the stretching of the wavelength. That's what it is. They cool down. But also, their positive energy is going down. And as things are expanding, the gravitational potential energy is also... was negative, gravitational potential energy is negative, and that's coming up. And so the sum stays zero, which is, I think, basically what you were saying. Okay, then the fifth question is whether the universe is infinite. And that question we don't know the answer to, for the good reason that we only see a small fraction, or what we think is a small fraction, of the universe, right? Well, the point is that light travels at a finite speed. There's only a finite time since the Big Bang. So there's clearly a farthest point that we can see, okay? Okay, the universe is 14 billion years old. And this finite portion that we see, we call the observable universe. So to draw it, this diagram is not completely satisfactory, but so forget the funky triangles. But the point is that so space is going this way. So space is one dimensional in this example. Time runs upwards. So let's say the Big Bang is down here somewhere. And today is at this moment in time up here. And we're located at this very moment, at this point in space, and at this point in time and in space. That's us. when we look backwards, so light travels along, in this diagram, along these 4 to 5 degree lines. So this guy at the Big Bang sent us a signal. That's it. If this signal is barely making it to us today, right now. And similarly, at some other point, let's suppose some other guy sent us a signal. It's making it to us now. It took 14 billion years for that signal to get to us. Well, that's true. So any point within this triangle was able to talk to us at one point or another during our past. But a point outside, somewhere here, never had a chance to talk to us. These points are beyond what we can see today. So that, by the way, is the same. It's just a simple statement, is that points that are out here today, we don't see them, right? We see points that are in our past, not points that are.
This is something back with redshift. I've heard that redshift is quantized. It has discrete values. Is that true?
Light gets emitted. In practice, that's not true. So the point is that there's various effects that, even if an atom were to send you off a signal at some precise frequency, there's all sorts of effects that will broaden that frequency. For example, if it had proper motion with respect to you, it could interact with gas in between, whatever.
Yeah, so how do we know that all of the redshift is caused? We don't know that all the redshift is caused by expansion. It could be by gravitational effects and proper motion.
So that's a good question. So the point is that, how do I know for sure that the redshift I observe of these distant galaxies is really due to the expansion of the universe? I don't have a proof, but I know two things. One is that Hubble's law, which is a law that follows from the equations of an expanding universe, is also obeyed in this redshift distance relation that I mentioned. That's one thing. Second of all, this whole picture of the expanding universe is that the universe started differently, in some sense, was very different early on than it is today. Right? And we test this as well. So if you look further back, galaxies look different than the galaxy we live in. They look younger. They have younger stars. If we look further back, we see remnants of the very early universe, the microwave background. So all of it is, evidence from different directions that tells you that it's really an expansion effect.
So do we know then, the original question, do we know it's not quantized?
Well, so insofar as whenever light is emitted, it's quantized, but in observations you don't see, it's not like you see, redshift being spin.
Certain amounts, it can have almost any amount.
Yeah, basically. That's right. I mean, if you were to plot galaxies, so I'll show you a movie later of the Sloan Digital Survey, which basically maps out a bunch of galaxies, you would find if I showed you the Hubble plot that you'd get from these galaxies, it's, you have a bunch of points, but it's, you can fit a smooth curve through it. So it's
I know you see this picture, because it goes vertical and it goes to the right as well, right?
Yes.
So that means there's going to be a point in that graph that we'll never ever be able to see, but as time goes on and space goes on, we'll be able to see parts of the other one.
Good. That's good. So, very good. So, indeed, in this picture, if I wait long enough, then some other point out here will be able to talk to me. Indeed. However, this is not true if the universe is actually accelerating today. It could be that, and this is what we think is happening, it's possible that this point is actually receding so fast from us, faster than the speed of light, that we'll never get a signal from it to us. So it's possible that, in fact, we're only going to see only a fraction of the total universe because of this, which would be a pity, but we will never know what's out there. Okay, so I better move on. So the point, though, that I want to make is, so we don't know for sure what's out there beyond what we can see. But the second part of this talk will pertain to what we think happened a fraction of a second after the Big Bang, which is what we call inflation. And inflation gives you a dramatically different picture of what the universe is beyond what we can see. What I'll argue is that the universe is actually exponentially larger than the fraction we can see. And moreover, that it's mostly empty. Okay? It's mostly empty with other universes floating around. So that's going to be the second part of the talk. But just to conclude, coming back to a question that was asked earlier, what are the, let's just close on with the Big Bang, what's the successes of the Big Bang? And there are various different things other than just the expansion that we discussed. One of them is the prediction that the universe started hot and then cooled down tells you that like elements formed at a certain time. And you can predict the abundance of the various like elements, so helium, beryllium, lithium, and so forth, and their isotopes. And it matches very well with observations. And this is something that happened 1 second after the Big Bang. Another prediction is that we should see remnant radiation, which is thermal, from the moment when the electrons and protons combine to form neutral hydrogen. And we observe that as well. It's the microwave background radiation, and it's exquisitely thermal. And finally, we explain how in the homogeneities, it's consistent, gives you a consistent picture of how small temperature fluctuations in this microwave background can grow over time and form galaxies and stars. Okay, so it gives you a consistent picture. Now, be that as it may, not everyone is convinced. And here's, even God is skeptical, according to some. I actually bought myself such a t-shirt that has this in Tennessee. in a Bible factory outlet. Such things exist. Okay. Now. So now I want to shift gears and tell you about the modern view of how the universe began. Okay? Now we're moving on to modern theories of the early universe. Now let's just be honest and tell each other a few paradoxes of what I've been saying so far. So I've given you, as I mentioned earlier, the Big Bang tells you what happened from 1 second until today, 14 billion years later, but says nothing about the bang itself. You should feel a little bit discontent about that. And moreover, one thing that's not obvious, but really, is, you know, it's quite puzzling, is what causes the universe to expand in the first place? I mean, I've mentioned over and over again that the expansion of the universe is a gravitational effect. It's gravity doing it. But everything we feel about gravity is attractive. It doesn't make things want to expand. It wants to make things collapse. Right? So the question is, how does that happen? Right? And the other question is, what created the matter that we see, right? All the stuff we're made of, the dark matter, the radiation. And all these questions, which are very profound, at least find a partial answer in an important addition to the Big Bang model, which is what we call inflation. And that's what I'll be telling you about in the next few minutes. And then this is the father of inflation. And inflation is 25 years old this year, actually, this theory. This is Professor Alan Booth. I had the pleasure of working with him at MIT until January. His proposal, inflation, is that shortly after the Big Bang, the universe underwent a tremendously rapid expansion. Okay, a burst of expansion like nothing else that happened after. In that burst, the size of the universe grew by a tremendously large factor in a tremendously short amount of time. That's 10 to the minus 32 seconds. So the whole point of what I'm going to tell you about is what's inflation, what's causing it, and what do we know about it. So let me just motivate it a little further, okay? When we look at the sky, when we look at the microwave background radiation, the microwave background was emitted when the universe was 400,000 years old. It was very young compared to today's age. It's like having a snapshot of a baby in the lifetime of a man. So you look at the sky, and here's how it looks, the microwave background. That's real data. It's not someone filling it out with a paintbrush. This is the temperature, and here's the contrast from zero to whatever. It's extremely, it looks the same everywhere, no matter where you look. The temperature is the same anywhere in the sky, in one part, in 100,000, one part in 75. Now the point is that we're seeing, so if we look at different parts of the sky, very far away, opposite end of the sky, at the time when the light was emitted, there had only been 400,000 years of time for them to talk to one another, so to speak. And that was not enough time for these very far away regions to be able to causally be in contact and tell each other, so to speak, to have the same temperature. There was just no time. Okay, so how did, this picture is a little complicated, so just forget about it. The point is that it's a causality problem. These are super far regions. They have no time to talk to one another before the light is emitted. Yet, when we look at them, they look the same. So how can that be? Does that make sense, this picture? I couldn't find a better picture of this. Yes?
Do the blue cones in that picture represent the triangle?
Yeah, okay, very good. So let me. Good. So let me do a sort of simpler version of this, which is exactly what you have in mind. So
that the uniform curvature circle is the same thing you showed before with the green purple speckly stuff, only that was done.
Yes. Very good. It looked very different, but that was subtracting this whole purple thing out. And it was just a small variation. These variations are precisely these one part in 10 to the 5 that are there. Very good. So the triangle picture is the following. So here's the picture I had before was space going this way, time running up this way, and you are here, and you look back in time, and here's the past light cone. Okay, so the furthest points that have had time to talk to you, and the light rays go out this way. Okay? The microwave background is some particular time when the light was emitted. So this is time zero, let's say. And this is time 400,000 years. At that point, light gets emitted to us. Now, it looks like two points on this graph, but that's because it's only one dimension. In real space, there are more, and then it looks like a sphere. We see a sphere coming from there. Now, the point is that, like I said earlier, this is the region today of which we've had causal interactions with. These are the points that time to talk to us. But you can do this with any point on this graph. So if you take this point and you ask, what was the region that had time until this time to influence it? The answer is you draw your cone backward, and here it is. That's the region that has had time to influence this point. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And similarly, I can do the same for this other triangle. And the point is that these two triangles don't overlap. So there is no way for these two guys, what this says is that they were, what we say, causally disconnected. They had no way to talk to one another. Yes?
What's the slope on the line? Is that the speed of light, or is that the speed of the expansion?
Here is the speed of light, yeah, which I have normalized to be 45 degrees. That's fine. Okay? Yes?
What is so special about the 400,000 years that that's the time and the temperature that we measure?
Good. Very good. So Very good. So this moment is the moment when background radiation, the microwave background radiation is emitted, has to do with the moment when electrons combine with protons to form hydrogen. The binding energy of hydrogen is 13.6 eV electron volts. So crudely speaking, so that's the binding energy of hydrogen. Now, clearly, when the temperature of the universe was much higher than this, there was no way for the hydrogen to form and stick. Right? Electrons and protons were just flying all over the place. So it's when the temperature cooled down sufficiently so that all of a sudden you could form neutral hydrogen, and this happens at that time. You worked it out.
So that would be the beginning of what we now know as matter.
No, matter was formed much. Oh, I'm sorry. Well, neutral matter, if you like. Atoms.
Okay.
Right. So before then, at about a second, is when you form elements. So nuclei, when protons and neutrons combine together to form helium and so forth. This is the time. I should finish the story. This is the time when things combine to form neutral stuff. And when you form neutral stuff, when the universe becomes mostly neutral, then light can propagate freely, basically. Light interacts with charged stuff. So that's why this light, from then on, just goes unaffected to first approximation from there to here. And that's how we get this picture. Okay? And the point about inflation, now this diagram won't capture this, so you have to take my word for it, is time here is not, now I'm going to switch the plot a little bit, and it's not time that we normally measure as our notion of time. It's a time that's rescaled also by the expansion of the universe. So this is going to sound funny. So even though what inflation does is it adds time, which is really 10 to the minus 32 seconds here. But on this plot, it corresponds to adding a huge amount of time in my different time. Okay? It's kind of like adding, logarithmic time. So it keeps going. And by adding this tremendous amount of time, this is what inflation does. So the Big Bang goes well below the board. And all of a sudden, I can extend these light cones further down, and they indeed intersect down here. Physically, what inflation does is it takes a small patch of space and blows it up exponentially. Okay, so take a small patch initially. It has all the time in the world to become homogeneous, have the same temperature. And then what inflation does is it blows it up into a huge universe. That's another way to understand how things can look the same when we look at different parts of the sky. Okay, so these are just words, and what I thought I would do for the rest of for whatever is left of the time, is to explain to you what. Actually, let's just take a break. Actually, so yes.
Can I say that inflation theory basically assumes that there's an initial patch in space which is in thermal equilibrium. And then it expands, and that's why eventually everything we see after 400,000 years looks in equilibrium.
Okay, so not precisely. In some sense, it assumes, it doesn't necessarily, it doesn't necessarily assume that things have to be, that something here had to be in thermal equilibrium at all. It just assumes you don't even need stuff to be there in the first place. Could be empty space. What it does assume is that things have to be smooth. Space has to be smooth, not extremely curved or anything else. Mm-hmm. So a small patch of space which is smooth, then that thing gets expanded, and then I'll tell you how we fill it up with thermal radiation afterwards. Okay? So let's take a little interlude. So let's hope that works. That doesn't work, it's going to be a shame. Okay? definition. So we'll postpone the Okay, so we'll postpone the movie for a little bit, unfortunately. So the point is, so what I would like to explain to you in the remaining few minutes is what is actually causing this burst of growth, okay? Because what I've said so far is what you would read in a popular science article, and it wouldn't tell you so much about the underlying physics, okay? So I want to slowly build my way through what we think is actually causing this inflation that I've been talking about. So we have to walk through a bunch of concepts. So first concept is what gravity actually is. So according to Newton, the force between two objects only depends on their mass and their separation. That's what gravity is, according to Newton. In particular, if I take, I put on a scale, a block, two blocks of gold, okay? Same number of gold atoms, same mass. But I take one of them and I heat it up, okay? So let's suppose this has some temperature, whereas let's suppose this guy is quite cold. According to Newton, those would have the same weight. The balance wouldn't dip either way. Now, according to Einstein, gravity is, Einstein's theory is a relativistic theory of gravity. And as you know from relativity, mass is the same as energy through E equals mc squared. So Einstein would say any energy, in fact, weighs something in some sense. So if you did this experiment and you could measure, you had a very finely accurate balance, you would actually find that this guy weighs more. According to Einstein. Okay. So energy gravitates. That's not so surprising because of this relativistic equation that we know. The surprising thing is that not just energy gravitates, but also pressure. Okay. And this is not such an easy thing. It's not an easy thing to understand. But if you follow the theory, even the pressure of stuff can gravitate. Now, I'll illustrate this with an example, which I'm not completely confident it's accurate, okay? But it captures the essence of what I want to say, and then I'll show you a more precise way to understand this. So let's do the following thought experiment. You take two boxes, and you fill them with gas. One of them is filled with a gas of photons, okay? These wiggly lines. And it has some temperature, to be simple. The other box, I'll fill up with massive particles, which are basically doing nothing, okay, just standing there. So here, the energy is mostly the mass through E equals mc squared. The energy is mostly the mass of these guys. Whereas here, the energy is the temperature. And I'm going to tune things so that they have exactly the same total energy, these two gases. But as you know, the pressure of a gas of photons is comparable to its energy density. So it has significant pressure. Whereas these massive guys have negligible pressure. And again, so basically what Einstein's theory would say is that the gas with more pressure, which is this one, would actually be heavier. Okay? So positive pressure contributes to greater attraction. And as I'll show in the next slide, so it's impossible to have negative energy, right? You don't want to have negative energy with gravity. But you can have negative pressure, as I'll explain. And negative pressure contributes repulsion. So gravity can be repulsive when you include pressure, which is a remarkable fact. So here's another way you can understand this. It's a couple of lines of equations, which captures all the physics you want. So consider this, setup. You take a sphere of dust, let's say, just a sphere of stuff, has radius r and mass m. And let's put a test particle at the surface of the sphere and ask, what's the acceleration, the gravitational acceleration that this particle feels? Now, from Newton's point of view, that's simple, right? So it's just the acceleration. So the particle is sitting at radius r, distance r from the center. So its acceleration is just given by the total mass divided by the distance squared to the center. And assuming that that's a homogeneous sphere, the total mass is given by the volume times the density of the sphere. Okay? So I just rearrange this a little bit, divide by r, and I find this equation that relates the acceleration of the test particle to the density of the stuff inside. Actually, if you think of, now let's think of this sphere of dust as being able to expand. And think of r as the radius of the sphere changing in time. This is precisely, that's a cosmological equation, right? That's telling you how the sphere expands in time as a function of its density. And indeed, that would be the cosmology that Newton would infer. Only depends, the rate of expansion would only depend on the density. So any questions about this part? This is called, yes, it's just Newtonian. We call this Newtonian cosmology. Einstein, if you work out in general relativity, the equation for cosmology, it looks amazingly similar to this. It's the same form of the equation, where r is the distance between any two points, if you like. And the key point is that it doesn't just depend on the density, but it also depends on the pressure of the stuff in that region. Yes?
I need you to back up just one slide. When you talk about a gas photons, what does that look like? And when you talk about a gas photons under pressure, what model can I visualize better?
Okay, so yeah, you just imagine, right, so a gas is a collection of particles which has some distribution. For example, if it's in thermal equilibrium, it has some distribution for the velocities of the guys inside. The visual picture for
photon, I've never thought of the gas, you know.
It's exactly the same thing.
Okay.
You think of it as, you just think, normally how you think of photons as particles, you just think of them as a gas of these photons.
So how could I visualize those photons being under pressure?
So it's not that, so what really happens is they're exerting pressure, if you like. They're relativistic species. And so if you ask, what's the force per unit area? So if you had a wall, and you put some gas of photons, or just photons here, and you ask, what's the pressure that I would need to exert to keep the wall where it is? The answer is the pressure you would have to exert would be comparable to the energy density of the photons themselves. Whereas if you just have massive stuff, just particles, the answer is it would be a minute fraction. The pressure would be a minute fraction of their energy density.
Okay.
Actually, can I ask one of the organizers if I could get a technician? Because I would like to show the movie at the end. It's really cool.
Yeah. The pressure, is it assumed to be uniform?
Yes. In this case, it would be...
It's not a function of the R.
Good. So, in this case, So in this case, the pressure, it depends on the stuff you're talking about. In the case of... As the universe, so think of the energy density. As the universe expands, this will go down.
Yes.
And for stuff that we know and love, like, for example, the radiation photons, the radiation gas I mentioned, the pressure would also go down in time. That has to do with what kind of stuff you're talking about.
And the rho here is refers to the Westmeyer's energy or what kind of energy?
All energy.
All
yeah.
energy?
Yeah. So in the case,
including,
so the energy density including everything. So the, for example, for photons, it has to do with the temperature, the particular fourth.
But also, the pressure T is also related to the kinetic energy, right?
Yes. So in the
case, one third of the...
Absolutely. That's right. So that has to do with the properties of the stuff you're talking about. We call this the equation of state, how the pressure is related to the energy density. So that's a good question. So in the case of photons, the precise relation, as you said, is one third of the energy density. Okay, for radiation in general. Okay, and the stuff I'm moving towards is some funky stuff that has pressure being minus rho. Okay, so it's negative. Okay, we're moving towards some exotic type of energy. Now the point that I want to convey with this, this equation is that if pressure is negative and sufficiently negative, you can actually have, so if this term is negative, you can find that the right-hand side is positive, which tells you that, in fact, things are accelerating away as opposed to decelerating. It's a gravitational repulsion, so to speak, provided that the stuff you're talking about has negative pressure. And we can actually solve this equation. So if pressure is sufficiently negative, it turns out that this right-hand side is constant in time. So this is just a constant. And the solution, now you can solve for this as a function of time, you get an exponential. So the scale factor of the universe, what tells you about how the universe is expanding in time, is an exponential in time. Which means, roughly speaking, in the analogy of the rubber sheet, that points, your nearby points, are moving twice away from you in one unit of time. So the universe is doubling in size at every step of time, if you will, in these units of age. So it's tremendously rapid expansion, and that's what we call this exponential expansion is what we call inflation. Yes?
A quick question. Negative pressure, what does that look like? How could that exist tangibly?
Good. Yeah. So, very good question. So, the rest of the talk, I'll describe to you what the stuff we have in mind that does this. But here's a physical way to picture it. Okay? Positive pressure is stuff that exerts pressure outwards. So negative pressure is something that would pull inwards. So an example of this is an elastic or a rubber sheet. You stretch it, it wants to pull back. So in some sense, tension is equivalent to negative pressure. Ah, good. You're just in time for my interlude. So
can I ask another question while you're in there?
Sure. So what I want to do is show the movie. And show you right here. It's this it's on Google. And I didn't know how to put it on the big screen.
Okay. Are you gonna come back to, you said in inflation that the universe expanded by a factor of 10 to the 25 and 10 to the negative 32 meters per second.
Yeah.
Are you going to go later on to talk about why it did so dramatically for a short period of time?
Yeah, sure. I should give you numbers. But sure, I can give you numbers. It's actually, so I just told you that this function r of t, which in the grid language is the distance between any two points on that grid, if you like.
Okay,
let's normalize this so that that has unit 1. And this will tell you how fast they move away from one another.
Okay.
And that's e to the ht. And h here has to do with the energy scale at that time, which is very early on. So it's a tremendously large... So it's a tremendously large number. So you only need a very small amount of time to make this. Let's make this e to the 60, for example. This number here has to do with early universe stuff. It's so large that you need just 10 to the minus, whatever, 30 seconds or so, whatever I said, 32? Yeah, 32 to get out of this, even this.
And the reason it isn't continuing to expand at that rate is because H is going down as
a function? H is staying constant.
Oh, H is constant.
H is, is nearly constant. I'll show that to you a little. That's not obvious. Anything. These statements are not obvious. So H is staying nearly constant. But the overall expansion is growing exponentially fast.
OK, so 10 to the the expansion, you said 10 to the 25.
Yes, that's this, yeah, about.
That's, so 1 meter would, 2 objects 1 meter apart would be 2 objects 10 to the 25 meters
absolutely
apart.
Absolutely.
Within a period of time of 10
yeah
to the negative.
That's a good time way to visualize it.
But then obviously the universe isn't continuing to expand at that rate.
No, very good. So eventually this has to stop because we would never come into being if this was going this fast at that rate.
So why did it go so fast at that rate and why did it slow down? Will you look at
the I'm gonna show that in the next
awesome
yeah.
Just while we're on this, just to return to what he said with the meter stick and the distance is actually increasing.
Yeah.
And when you're talking about the redshift of the expansion, due to the expansion of space,
yes,
is there a way to distinguish between that expansion and a recessional velocity, like a redshift from a recessional velocity?
You're not going to know for sure. As I mentioned, well, I guess the best answer I can give to this about whether redshift is really due to expansion or not is that it follows this Hubble law. And moreover, if it was really random, you would expect that, yeah, you'd expect equal number of blue and red shifts overall. Yeah. These are all very subtle issues. Maybe we can talk about it over lunch. Okay, the movie. So let me. Oh, cool.
Ah,
okay. So this is. Thank you so much. And how do I?
Thanks,
Jake.
Okay. So I just go in and close it, and I go here, and I just do it.
Yeah.
Thank you. Okay. So this is a telescope in New Mexico, and it's the largest survey of the sky that's been done thus far. It's mapped 500,000 galaxies so far, and up to about a redshift 1. This is a movie that was done to show you, so you've heard about Google Earth, where you can actually see where you live. So this is kind of like Google Universe. So you start from where we are, and we're going to zoom out of where we are. And every galaxy you're going to see on this are real galaxies in the sense that these are, wherever you see a galaxy, there is a galaxy in the sky. So this is like a 3D version of.
Can you tell me where the reference is?
Yeah, I'll show you that. As soon as I'm done, I'll give you the link. Okay, so here we go. There's normally music with it, but it's not very good music. So So this is that many galaxies that they've mapped so far, and quasars. So here we go. Now we're moving away from where we are, and we see many, many galaxies. Mm-hmm. Some of them look like ours, others are elliptical, and so forth. Keep going. And you can see already, when you get to a significant distance, you can see galaxies are forming kind of webs. They're clustered. They're not just completely randomly distributed. And that's gravity. Gravity. You know, galaxies attract each other. And these are younger, these are quasars. So they're sort of very young. Young galaxies.
Do galaxies form galaxies of galaxies?
They form clusters of galaxies.
Those clusters look like a galaxy itself?
Well, it's a little different. So it's a little different because it's not just bringing, there's a lot of gas in there as well. So a galaxy is mostly stars and not much gas, whereas in these clusters, there's a lot of stuff. So the universe is not a pie shape like I'm showing you.
Is that due to the night cone?
Yeah, no, it has to do with the way they're observing the sky. So they're observing the sky. Right, so this is, okay, so at that point, what we're seeing is the microwave background with the little spots that I was showing earlier, seen as a sphere, and we see it as a sphere. And this is the scale. So in other words, this is how big the microwave background looks like compared to the portion of the sky that these guys
So the shape of it is because of the observable area that you're covering?
Exactly. Absolutely. Okay. And these are real scientists, I can assure you, by their looks. So, okay.
So where's my cursor?
And all those things we saw are real images. It's not an artist's interpretation of the
matter. No, these are actual artists. So when they were showing galaxies, these are artists' interpretation. But they're capturing, but they're sitting there, and whenever it was a spiral galaxy like ours, they're putting a spiral galaxy. And
Jacob, help?
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, the dog is just going to did you see a cursor?
Yeah.
I don't know when you see it. It
came in from the left on the screen, didn't it?
Ah, it came from the left.
On the screen.
I'm not doing a good advertisement for Macintosh.
They're a nature, not a crowd.
There you go. Are you?
Yeah, the boss. There's a different effect. Ah, got it there. I got it. Okay, I'm going to
do it. Was just because it gets the back black back.
Ah, fantastic. Okay. There we go. And as promised, oops. I realize I'm running over time, so can we go back here? Ah, so here's the website. So would I be allowed to go a little longer? Or?
Yeah.
Yep. Yeah. Okay. So maybe a few, maybe 5 minutes or so.
With that really, really fast expansion, you run into problems because, like, when did the physical laws we know come into being? Because that obviously is not like,
very good question. So I'll show you what causes this to happen, because that's a completely valid question. Eventually you want to end this and match on to the universe we know. So I'll explain to you, first I got to explain what does it, and then you'll see how it ends. Okay, so to recap the story so far, we've learned two things in this inflation business. That according to Einstein, it's not just mass and energy that gravitate, but also pressure. We've also seen that energy, of course, can't be negative, but pressure can. So if you have some funny stuff that has negative pressure, I've argued that it leads to some of this rapid expansion. But I've also told you that all forms of matter that we know have positive pressure. Right? Radiation has positive pressure, the stuff here, dark matter. So then you're welcome to ask, so where's the beef, right? Where's the, what am I talking about?
Negative pressure suggests something pulling in.
Pulling in.
But that causes expansion.
Yes.
Okay.
So
say yes and move on.
Yes. Maybe it means.
But, let's not be too pessimistic because, you know, those who use the search can tell you that. So to understand what the beef is, I realize I've been going on for a long time, but let me just tell you about a few important building blocks, and these are really the bread and butter of my own research every day. So these are very helpful concepts. So to understand what causes the exponential inflation, first we recall the concept of a field. Okay, fields, we're used to them, electric and magnetic fields. And the thing that you're used to about fields is that they permeate space. right? They're everywhere in space, and they also have energy. They carry energy. Now, the culprit for inflation, the thing that does it, is not the electric or magnetic field, but it's a different field, a hypothetical field, that I'm going to call the inflaton. Okay, it's not stuff, it's not a field we've seen before that we've observed, it's hypothetical. It's not that crazy, okay? In some, this is motivated by modern theories of particle physics and string theory. So string theory, for example, has a plethora of these guys, okay? And some of them, indeed, can lead to successful inflation. Okay? So it's something, this field permeates space in the early universe, that's the first part. Second concept is potential energy. Again, something we're used to in classical mechanics. Potential energy is energy that can get converted into motion, into kinetic energy. But if you think about it, potential energy is also associated with interactions. The potential energy of this thing above the Earth is due to the gravitational interaction between the Earth and this thing. So potential energy has to do with interactions. Now, this guy interacts with the Earth, so do fields. So these things that permeate space that are fields can also interact and therefore have potential energy.
Interacting with matter or with themselves?
Could be with other stuff or with themselves. In this case, for what we care about, for the potential energy that I care about, it's the interaction with itself. That's a good question. So these are fields that interact with themselves. So my hypothetical field interacts with itself and has potential energy. And therefore, if fields permeate space and they have potential energy because of their self-interaction, that potential energy will also permeate space. Yeah. And it is this potential energy, of the potential energy of my hypothetical field, the inflaton. It's that potential energy, which is a form of energy that has negative pressure. If you work out the equations, you find that this potential behaves exactly as something that has negative pressure. That's not obvious, but you have to take my word for it. And these are the guys, these are the four people that that have realized the importance that these potentials can play in driving inflation. So I've mentioned Alan Guth before. This is my PhD advisor, Professor Paul Steinhardt, and these two other gentlemen. Now we're coming to the point of where the matter comes from. I asked earlier, where does the matter that we observe, where does it come from? Or how did it get created? Now the first thing is, if there's any matter early on, when this phase of exponential expansion starts, it quickly gets diluted, right? As you've really nicely illustrated, you know, whatever was there got extremely thinned out. It says it's completely empty. So you get rid of any stuff that's there to begin with. So the inflating universe quickly becomes very empty and boring. But so how can you get matter out of this? Well, potential energy, as you know, is a form of energy that gets converted into something, gets converted into kinetic energy and so forth. So here what happens is the potential energy of my inflaton gets converted into matter and radiation. Once this thing stops, I haven't told you how it stops, but once it stops, this energy, this potential energy gets converted into the stuff we know and love, into radiation, into matter, and so forth. When this happens, that's the end of inflation, and here you're led to a universe that's very hot. All this radiation is created, and it matches on to the usual Big Bang story that I told you earlier. The universe starts very hot and keeps expanding. Okay? So, I know this is a lot of stuff. These two slides are pretty dense, so I'll give you a different pictorial way of seeing it based on mechanics, right? So here's just a particle that has a potential as a function of coordinate x. And that's the potential it looks like. The potential energy looks like this. And let's suppose initially my particle sits at a value of x so that it's on top of the potential hill. So initially the particle, if this is very flat, the particle will roll very slowly. So most of its energy will be potential energy, very little kinetic energy. However, once it finally reaches the steep part, all of a sudden it rolls very fast, and its potential energy gets converted into kinetic energy. The inflaton field I've been talking about precisely has a potential of this form. The potential I was talking about has a potential which really looks like this. Except instead of talking about the position of a particle, this is x represents the value of the field. Okay? The value of this field. But the physics is the same. So whenever my field sits up here, it has mostly potential energy. And that potential energy, as I've argued, drives inflation. The universe expands tremendously fast. But eventually, as the field rolls down the hill, much like the particle, it reaches a point where it falls off. And when it falls off, it's no longer true that potential energy is dominating. So this exponential solution no longer holds. Things slow down. It's mostly kinetic energy of the field. It oscillates. And it turns out that when it oscillates very fast, its kinetic energy can gets dumped into creating stuff. Creating matter, creating radiation. And then we match on to the Big Bang picture. Okay, so that's the picture. Really rapid expansion through inflation. You match on to the usual story. Here's the microwave background. And over time, you form galaxies. Finally, okay, yeah, finally. Sorry to take so much time. But this is a very nice point, which is so far, what I've told you about was purely classical. So now we want to add quantum mechanics to the story. And if you add quantum mechanics to the story, you get a completely baffling picture of how the universe looks like beyond what we can see. Whether that's true or not, I don't know, but it's a compelling picture. So let's go back just a couple of slides to this potential. If it's classical physics, the particle just rolls down, right? If the slope is like this, you roll down. Quantum mechanically, you can have quantum fluctuations so that the particle doesn't just roll down, but it can also go up through quantum fluctuations. Right? Quantum mechanics allows for such events. So although in our universe, our field has rolled down the hill, quantum mechanically, elsewhere, it's possible that the field is going up or still sitting up here. Now, as you know, quantum mechanical events are rare. Right? So this is a rare thing. It doesn't happen often. But whenever you do it, whenever you manage to get uphill, your space is exponentially larger. Okay? Your space grows exponentially. So although it's rare, the payback is humongous. So the picture you have is a universe which is mostly empty. So what's white here is inflating space. So space where the field sits on top of the hill, universe is stretching exponentially fast. And these are bubbles where the potential, where the inflaton went down and created stuff. So these are other universes. We're one of those bubbles. So the picture is that well beyond what we can see, the universe is a collection of bubbles, a network of bubbles. The universe, like ours, are very different than ours. And in the intervening region is space that's expanding exponentially fast. So I'll stop here. I'll just say that this is not completely crazy, that inflation is something I didn't talk at all about today, but it has predictions that are testable. I wanted to focus mostly on the beginning of the universe as opposed to the predictions of inflation. That being said, inflation does not completely answer how the universe, it does not answer the question how the universe started. So even in that story of a universe exponentially expanding in the past, there is still a singularity. There is still a Big Bang, if you look back. And this, inflation doesn't resolve what happens there. So I'll just stop here. Thanks very much.
Thank you very much for that excellent presentation. We might, we're a little bit late, so we might take it. There are one or two questions now. We'll take those. And if there are any other questions, and I'm sure just hanging around for a little while, but if anyone had a question they did not ask, so maybe sit down.
fair, and then John, and then we'll head to lunch.
Just when you were talking about the potential at quantum mechanically kind of going backwards, would that mean the expansion of the universe would keep changing, like the rate
that
it's expanding?
Exactly. That's
and
what
almost probabilistically.
Absolutely. That's exactly what it is. People have done these amazing, I could give you links of amazing simulations of how this potential energy would fluctuate in space.
So
because of these quantum
just
because
it's accelerating today doesn't mean it would be accelerating tomorrow almost, right?
Ah, okay. So, well, that's it. So I should stress that what I'm talking about was the very early universe acceleration. Now, if you talk about today, first of all, it's not clear what's going to happen in the future. So much like here, the acceleration lasted for a while and stopped. Similarly, the acceleration we're observing would stop and also in the future. Okay, so that's not clear. We don't know about that.
And my extension was sort of for that one. Like you said, at 7 billion years, now we started to accelerate. Why did they figure, what was the calculation that said that at 7 billion years, that it started to slow down? What? Do they observe something else 7 billion years? We're seeing a difference in the observed?
Yeah. So we can observe. Yeah, so this has to do with the Hubble. Okay, so your question is, how do I know the universe is accelerating today?
Yeah.
Okay. So what you do is you look at, you test Hubble's law, plot redshift, you plot distance versus redshift. Okay, and if it follows Hubble's law, it's a straight line.
Yeah.
But relativistically, if you believe Einstein, there are small deviations which have to do with the deceleration or acceleration of the universe. Yeah. So depending on the bend of that curve, you can tell if the universe is accelerating or not, and when did that happen.
Okay, so they observed 7 billion by observation, not by theory.
By theory, it's a mystery why it happens at that moment.
Okay.
7 billion years, although that sounds like a big number, from a particle physics point of view, it's a very low energy scale. We live in a very low energy world. So it's a mystery why it happens today.
Okay.
I'll be at lunch so we can chat more.
Okay. So, thank you very much.
Thank you.
So lunch is just outside the bistro, so you can leave everything here. It's coming back around about 1 p.m. So it's about